welcome back to the back to this 11th hour. And partly talk a little bit about the meditation that we've just done and how it links in really with the with the subject of the hour, because this whole meditation is interesting, really. I mean, meditations are all sorts of things. I never know where they're going to go. At one point, I thought we were going to visit the tomb of Tutankhamun, but actually we veered off to something called the Mummy Cache, which is an actual place in the Valley of the Kings, where it's a time really late in the New Kingdom, when the Egyptian state was breaking down and there was a lot of tomb robbing. So the high priest of Amun at the time gathered together the mummies of the pharaohs and the queens and sundry high priests and priestesses, and gathered them together in a place of safety. Now, when you descended in a way into that mummy cache, the room where the mummy cache is, in a certain sense you're linking with the tradition of Egypt and linking with these beings, all of whom will have contemplated and studied the same images that you're contemplating. And that's one of the magic sometimes of these ancient texts, so that these texts that you'll find in the walls of the tombs, contemplation objects that they also will have looked at. So the words that you're contemplating, the images you have contemplated, will have been contemplated by people 5,000 years ago, and who will have embodied those ideas in order to keep the light alive. Now, one of the images that you get in the first register, top register of the 11th hour, after you get this figure of the goddess Sekhet restraining Apophis, she is helped by a whole load of figures who are holding a rope that links to the chain of Apophis. And in a certain sense, the linking with those who have come before us, those who have held the lights, worked with the inner traditions before us, we take our place in the rope. So we become part of these figures. You find it on page 237 at the top. They're called the Endowing Ones, the Influential Ones, the Stabilizers. And they're facing in two directions, because they're sort of because this idea of holding, it's an expansion of the idea that we hit in the previous hour, where the figure who's holding the snake with two heads going in two directions. So they're looking in two directions, and because they're about holding opposites together, and they're also restraining, they're helping Sekhet restrain the oppositional energy of Apep. Now, the other thing that happens in the end, that you'll see also on page 237, that it's right towards the end of the of that first register, is an enormous hand arises out of the duet, and the helps to hold the rope. Now, that hand really is the hand of the foremost of the Westerners, the ancient one. So there's something about this work that's really about linking with ancestral life, and the foremost of the Westerners is like the most ancient human being. So the image that they're showing here is that we cannot restrain Apep on our own. The experience is a corporate experience. We do this together. And we do it as by being links in a chain. Now, this is an idea that you find coming right down through the generations. You find it in Platonic teaching, you find it in Neoplatonic teaching, you find it in the Renaissance. It's something called the golden chain. The idea that there is that people who work with the energy of awareness, who work with enhancing the life-enhancing powers of the universe against the inertia, form a link, a corporate body that holds, that together restrains that energy of entropy. You know, there's a great alchemical text called The Golden Chain of Homer, the Ora Catena, which again has the same idea of things being linked together, and the people and stepping into a kind of a lineage of people that just help each other. It's like an enormous tug of war team, being part with APEP one side of it, and the everyone who stands for the energy of light and generation of new life on the other side of it. Now, just beyond the hand, you come across a more individualized version of it, where we're shown little serpents with little figures lying on top of them, holding coils of rope. And beyond them is an image of Osiris in his form as the foremost of the Westerners. So,
stay where you are. Are you in the middle register yet?
I'm in the top register, page 237.
237.
Right, it's right. This is right at the end of the top register.
Right.
Right, so we're given this big, so if you like, we've got this, the first, if I go right back to the beginning of the top register, we've got these forms who are challenging Apep on the left-hand side. We've then got the goddess Serket laying on top of him and holding the chain that restrains him. Then we've got the big tug-of-war team. Then we've got the great hand that helps to hold things in place. And then the next thing that we're shown is individual versions of the larger work, because we're shown these five figures with holding individual serpents. So what we're being shown here is the two levels, is the if you like the le- working with this as an energy, as an universal presence, and working with our own version reflected in ourselves. So there's that great sense of Apep, the great sense of inertia, the eclipotic energies that restrict everything that you find in the universe. And then there are the reflection of these energies within us. And, you know, what I've done graphically is shown as figures in the same posture and shape as Serket, and each of which is holding a little rope, which is their own. And the titles they get given is, the first one is called Geb, who is the first. Geb, of course, is the earth god. Now that reminds us of the earth posts of Geb. Right, so if we go back into that seventh hour, the very pivotal seventh hour, where we're rising up and we're working with the ancient Egyptian equivalent of the seven deadly sins. If you remember those posts where you're working with opposites and resolving the tension of those opposites. So the fact that the first Kibbutz of Purim was called Geb is reminding us of that. The second figure is called Staff, which reminds us of the idea of the Geb staff. Third figure is who is of the course. Course there means like a course of action, who's carrying out the action of the Geb staffs. Who adores his mother is a link to the goddess Serket, who is the one who is showing us how to work with the venom. And then the fifth figure is called Cold Refreshment, is his companion. Now, if you remember, this idea of cooling, the idea of cool water, is a theme that runs through the Book of Gates. That's really about this place of becoming still, becoming present, but not activated. So the text, and then just beyond that is this figure with carries the wild staff of power and the white crown. So this is the Osiris figure, who is foremost of the West. So this is a sort of individualized version of the larger collective version. Because we've got this great collective hand of foremost of the West, but here we've got our own individual link to that archetype of Osiris, to the Osiris made beautiful that is ourselves. And what we're recapitulating here is that work of the Geb posts, the earth posts. Because because it's in that seventh hour that we learned really how to work with opposites, how to work with this energy of apep as it applies to ourselves. So here it shows us doing this work, restraining our individual serpents. Now the text that accompanies us for this bit says, they are in this plan, they stand erect for Ray, as he appears in glory, who is Ray, as he approaches them. Say they to Ray, appear in glory, Ray, come into power, he of the Aket, behold us, as we force into place Apep, who is rendered to his fettering. You need not rise, Ray, against your adversary. Your adversary shall not raise against you, shall not arise against you. Developed is your hallowedness, your sacredness, who are in the spiral. Apes is being smashed into his blood. He is persecuted. Ra stands erect for the peaceful hour. The great God must pass through after Apep's fetters have been tied. The serpent exists in this plan. She who permits breath puts out his bindings. Now the bark of this great god, it could go aground at this juncture, which is of Apep, but smoothly goes this great god after the tying of his fetters. The thing that Apep is trying to do at this last minute is to make the boat of Ra run aground so that it can't cross over into the horizon. They are in this plan, they hold fast the abundance of this one who is evil, so they hold back this resistance. They say to Ray, go smoothly, Ray, travel on, he of the Aket. Behold, daggers are placed into the degenerate of zeal, which is Apep, who is in his disorders. They are in this plan, meaning as guards for the offspring of the exhausted one. They guard them through that which weakens and persecutes, which is in the hand of whose remains are hidden. He is given the mortal grapple by means of his entourage at the gate of which is foremost of the west. Say those who are of the gods, pregnant darkness to your zeal who conspires against rightness, destruction to you who are offspring of the exhausted one. The hand of who is hidden replaces your evils through what weakens and persecutes, which is in him. Geb, he is the guard for your bonds, the offspring of the bindings that give you a weakening. You are safeguarded through the scrutiny of the foremost of the West. They exist in this plan. They add weight to the bindings of the offspring of the exhausted one. Now the bark of the great god may go aground at this juncture of Apep, but he goes smoothly after the bonds have been put on. So the part of what's being played with here is a sense of the great collective process, so that the sun continue rise, but also we're looking at also in the reflected process. They talk about the offspring of Apep, they're talking about the reflections of Apep within us. So there's Apep with this great energy in the universe, but there's also Apep in living inside us. This is the snake that lives within us, that tries to stop us, that is trying to stop our own movement through life. And to, in a way, that image of running aground. So that's a great image for this point of the journey, really, because of course everything is going well. But actually, what could happen at this point is a ship runs aground. It goes off course, it hits the bank, it ruptures, it cannot go any further forward. So what we're having to do at this moment when the energy is rising, so this is the problem that particularly arises when creativity is on the verge of manifesting. It's that sudden loss of confidence, that sudden fear, sometimes the fear of visibility, sometimes the fear of how we will be received. So there's a fear of what will happen if I stick my head above the parapet. And it's that moment where the ship can go aground. Penny, is that looking like trying to say something?
I'm just got lost somewhere. Are we the offspring of the exhausted ones?
The offspring of the exhausted ones are the little serpents. They are the reflections within us of Apep.
Yes, got it. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Yeah, they got it. Which is in the hand of whose remains are hidden. That's obviously, what is that the title of?
Yeah.
Okay, so Let me go back to this bit of the speech, right? So they say to Ray, "Go smoothly, Ray, travel on, he of the Aket. Behold, though, daggers are placed into degenerate of zeal, which is Apep, who is in his disorders." So Ray is being warned that here is Apep, and he has his daggers out. They are in this plan, being as guards of the offspring of the exhausted one. They guard them through what weakens and persecutes. So the they here are the figures holding the ropes, who are guarding the offspring of the exhausted one, which are the little serpents. They guard them through what weakens and persecutes, which is in the hand of whose remains are hidden.
So the guards are protecting us.
The guards are that quality of, yes, protecting us from the serpent. And it's that quality that we have when we pay attention to these oppressive energies within us. It's that guarding quality. Now the guards, if we go right back to the beginning of that, of the first register, we get shown this. So there's the guards that are lying down, that are adopting, right at the end, that are adopting the shape of Circuit. So we know that they're aping what Circuit are doing. The other image you have, and you'll find this on page 236, is those who are facing Apep, and they are figures with they hold a coil of rope in one hand and a dagger in the other. And there's human-headed ones, and there's ones whose heads are like snakes. So these are the fetterers and the slaughterers. So there is there's two qualities really that are needed when we work with this energy of entropy. We need to cut it off. We need to stop it, and then we need to hold it back, which is why we need the knife and the rope really. The other thing that we find Selkid doing is that she is on top, is almost spreading herself on top of the serpent, continuing to breathe and working against the venom of Apep that can close up the throat. So these are all kind of symbolic and metaphorical ways of describing this process of working with these reflections of the serpent that we find within us. And that's why there's a number of them, and they're little serpents. And further down the register, we've got the great serpent.
Can I ask something quickly, Ian?
Yeah.
So I'm kind of getting the whole thing of our inner resistance and our sort of giving up.
Yeah.
But you said something quite interesting there about sticking our head above the parapet, or being. So is there also a thing of, I would say something, but I don't really want take the consequences, or I don't want the retaliation as well.
Yeah, that's the very particularly the kind of resistance that manifests at this point, because we're right at the point of expression, just before expression, right? So in the 11th hour, we're going to enter into dawn, and the sun, the crossing the horizon. So it's exactly that. It's like that moment of loss of confidence or fear, where we don't want to be seen, we don't want the consequences of energy to affect us, and instead of going over the horizon, well, that moment we run aground. So that, you know, it's that image of like instead of holding true and letting the momentum of all our work manifest and show itself, it's that act of self-sabotage where we just run aground and stop everything and let everything go.
I'm just thinking of this in terms of therapy.
Yeah.
In terms of a moment where somebody's about to just like come through with something.
Yeah.
And then perhaps they're not met, or the person reacts to them, or judges them even.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's very common, isn't it? I think a lot of our work in therapy is to help somebody take that risk. And in which they discover they're met differently. You know, a lot of the work I think that we do is reparative of that particular wound in some ways, because it's at that place where somebody, because you're right, where either people are badly received, or the other thing that can happen is they're either attacked, or they can be exploited in that moment. Because that moment of putting your head over the parapet, that moment of emergency, is also a moment of great vulnerability. Yeah. You know, and if people have been received badly in that, if they've been colonized, if they've been attacked, then of course the temptation to run aground is very strong, because it's much safer than showing yourself.
I don't want to take up too much space with this, but I'm just quite intrigued, because obviously there's countertransference in that as well.
Yeah.
And potential for countertransference. So if somebody does take that chance and they're met with the countertransference, they're kind of back to square one in a sense.
Well, they are. And of course, that's what can happen. I mean, that's the power of countertransference and countertransference, is that you enact a historic relationship. Mm-hmm. And then in therapy, you have to kind of unpick that, you know, so that place where you find yourself blowing it and you know, the classic would be somebody's feeling something and you don't notice because you're lost in the countertransference. And so their experience is, you know, I keep trying to show myself, nobody ever listens. And then, of course, the advantage then is, of course, they're then at least pissed off with you in present time, so that you can together then unpick that and discover what needs, you know, what reparative work needs to happen there somewhere. But in a way, that's really part of this whole territory, because there's so much the territory of what happens when I show myself, what happens when I take the risk, when I arise out of the inner space and I come into outer relationship. It's a lot in this, really.
And we lost you there for a moment.
He's back.
Hi, am I back?
Yeah.
Okay. So what I was saying is that the particular territory of this 11th hour is the whole vulnerability of showing yourself, and what happens when you show yourself. And in a way, one of the things that you see the ancient Egyptians doing in this top register is really suggesting that we need a lot of help in that process. So this is a dangerous moment. Right, and it's very.
It sounds like courage.
Yeah, it's courage, but also connection. So we need a lot of connection. We need a lot of to feel that we're part of something, that we're not on our own, and sort of and in a way, there's something very literally encouraging. It's interesting, the word courage. We think of the word encourage, you know. So in order to have courage, that what's also needed is connection and support. So that we can take, you know, what is a considerable risk to sort of come out of the underworld, and because the imagery, of course, they use is that Ra comes out of the underworld as the baby sun, as the new sun, who goes into the underworld as the old man who's experienced all the rigors of the day, and comes out again reborn new, but as a baby, and so has all that kind of life and power and sensitivity and vulnerability of the babe, you know, and therefore needs protection, so we have the you know, these figures saying trago smoothly, Ra, you know, that Apep is bound, he goes smoothly after the bonds have been put on Apep. So that need to protect the new life as it's emerging is really kind of strongly stressed in a way.
I'm sorry to keep tenaciously going on about this point, Ian, but what happens when that's not available?
Well, that's the point, right? That's the place. So what happens is, and that's why the image is very helpful, I think, is you run aground, right? Something gets stopped in you. So that's why in therapy and with these places, what typically we find ourselves when people have had that experience, you find yourself having to revisit and revisit and revisit this territory, because normally by the time anyone gets as a therapist, that experience has been repeated, you know, maybe millions of times.
Yeah.
So that sense of feeling like I cannot trust myself, I cannot show myself in the world. So that's where you find the work, it's the spiral nature of the work, you find yourself coming back to it again, then coming back to it again, then coming back to it again. And little by little, you know, it's a bit like something's gone really stuck on a sort of, and little by little, each time you revisit it, it starts to free itself, and eventually, when that's happened enough, it frees it, the life energy frees itself, and people can then take the risk of stepping forward. But it takes a lot of time, a lot of time, a lot of patience. Anything else on this before we have a tea break? And then come back for the last hour.
Sorry, and did you say the life energy unfreezes itself?
Yes, it yes, but each time we revisit this place, and if we, and in particular if we revisit it with help, with contact, right, so that we discover, so each time we discover we receive differently. That gives us the confidence, it gives us the courage to start to trust our flow of life energy. Because what happens when we're badly received in that place is our confidence in our energy and our creativity freezes. Or their image is like the boat of Ra, instead of floating in the river of life, instead of moving with the river of life, runs aground. And so another image we could have of it being refloated. So you have to help the boat get off the riverbank and get off the bank and be floated, so you can come back into the flow of life again.
Gosh, this is so incredibly useful.
It's a prenatal place then, isn't it? Very much. Yeah.
Well, it's prenatal. It's absolutely about, yes, it's certainly about when, what happens when you're born. I mean, that, you know, how are you received? But of course, it's something that happens all the time. You know, every time we make contact with somebody, every time we show something, you know, the anyway, that's the great beauty of these things, I think, you know, is that it's, as opposed to the older psychoanalytic notion of once, you know, things have happened to you can never be erased. It's not that things can be erased, but our relationship to them can be altered by, you know, so each time we are received well, we alter everything else that's happened to us. Not dramatically. I mean, the whole point of it, this kind of work, when we're working with these deep patterns, is the work is repetitive and slow and in some ways invisible. It's like, because if we use this metaphor of the grounded boat, right? You're trying to help a boat free itself. Now, a lot of time you'll experience nothing happening, because when a boat is stuck, really, you have to kind of, well, normally what you have to do is to get water underneath it so that it starts to lift. And until the moment it lifts, you can feel like nothing is happening. And then something tips over, a tipping point is reached, and then something starts to move. And that's the mystery of working with these patterns and processes, really, you know. And that's why you do need patience, you do need kind of commitment to keep on working at it, because a lot of the time you just think nothing's happening, and then something shifts, and then you're in different territory.
This is an astonishing way of looking at life. It's really incredibly helpful.
Well, in a way, you see, they're so close to nature, in a way. I think that's the thing that's so interesting about the ancient Egyptians, that there's they very precisely look at nature and look at how things work. So this sense of the cycles of life, the cycles of the day, the cycles of the year, it's where this idea of art and balance is so profound in them. Because they really have an understanding of what happens when things are out of balance. You know, the great inundation of the Nile, if it's too much, everything rots. If it's too little, nothing grows. You know, and they're sort of, so they have to learn, they learn to be really accurate at perceiving nature and perceiving what happens. And also then discovering the reflection of that within them somewhere. You know, it's this very powerful interconnected universe somewhere, where they're good at reading the signs and noticing how one thing reflects another thing. You know, it's an universe where everything is mirroring each other somewhere.
Chinese are pretty good at that too.
Chinese are also very good at that. Another great traditional civilization that has really strong roots in nature. The way of the Tao in particular is absolutely about all that. Okie dokie, let's take a break for half an hour. Come back at 4 o'clock and we'll see what comes next. Okay.